Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast for Friday the 19th of May. Although we're speaking to you from the past, from yesterday to you now, or though today for us. Anyway, today we've got a double feature. We are going to talk to you about the Google I/O Developer Conference and all the exciting announcements from that. And we're also going to talk about the WannaCry ransomware attack on the NHS and on others. So we're looking at the best and the worst of technology. I had a joke then, but I'm not going to use it because Tamlin looked at me dismissively when I told him. No, I'm not going
to
do it.
You have to do it now.
Well, it was one of those things where I was going to say about, we're going to talk about how unscrupulous software developers are going to ruin your life and also WannaCry.
You should have gone with that.
Well, I've sort of done it now, haven't I?
Yeah.
Great. Without further ado, let me introduce our two speakers. And if you like listening to young, shy white men talking about technology, you're in for a treat, because we've got Henry Burrell, staff writer on Macworld and Tech Advisor.
Hello.
Hello. And Tamlin McGee, online editor at Computer World and Tech World.
Hello.
Let's talk. Henry Burrell, you're looking...
Hi.
You're looking very good. Were you up late last night?
Thanks.
Doing a live blog?
Yes.
What was it about?
It was about Google. We didn't go to the California one. Perhaps some of our colleagues over there did. But we went to the London Extended I.O., I.O. Extended, which just means it's a live stream in a small room.
so you were just watching it on there?
Yeah, it was an official Google event, which they're doing in several countries around the world. And we were just watching the keynote presented by all those Google execs. And it's got a bit of a... It's got a good reputation, actually, and I know, David, you love the Steve Jobs and Phil Schiller and all that lot getting up there. No, in the Apple...
I like Federighi.
Do you?
Schiller?
Schiller?
Who likes Schiller?
Don't know.
I'm all about Federighi.
Which one's he again?
Federighi
the
is
hair.
Hair Force One.
Exactly.
He's
so you got people who nicknamed Hair Force One, and Microsoft's man with a hat. Did he actually let go recently?
Roper, yeah, he's gone. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so... But Google do it quite well. They don't try and do an Apple thing because this isn't a hardware... conference. It's mainly developers. I was in a minority as a journalist there last night. Mostly people there for the developer community.
Really? There wasn't a lot of press?
Not that I saw. Most people were just developers who were there to talk with peers, probably rival companies as well. And then there was a keynote afterwards as well, which I didn't stick around for because it would have been like watching something in a different language. But The Google event was pretty cool. I mean, the best way to sum it up was that there was no hardware, and most of the announcements are small incremental changes to software, which isn't very sexy.
Hold on to your hats, people.
Not very sexy. But a few of the things did catch my attention, just because they're the sort of things that we wax lyrical about Apple doing all the time that make things easier to do on your phone. And this is basically Google just trying to improve normal people's lives in the way that they use their phone. So where do you want me to start? I didn't think there was lots to talk about, and I've written down 8 things.
That's
don't worry,
more
Tamlin.
Than enough, isn't it? Should we talk about Android first?
Okay, cool. Yeah, Android O, the next letter in the alphabet. The company is now called Alphabet, actually. So that was...
Is that why they're called that?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
Maybe. But
what does O stand for?
They don't know yet. Probably Oreo, because that seems easy. But they haven't still
announced.
They actually...
They had big piles of... I don't want to give away something that you were maybe going to use later. But they had a big pile of Oreo biscuits at the event.
They did. Apparently they also had those last year, though.
Of Oreos?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that ruins my whole extrapolation. I don't,
but it probably will be called that.
Did they also have piles of orange Skittles? And
keep going.
What, there isn't anything else, is there?
No.
Oranges. Opal fruit.
This is gold radio.
This is amazing. Sorry, dead air, isn't it? Yes, what's new about Android
O? So there's a boring way to break it down, which they started with, which is turning Android O and saying it's all about two things, this new update. Fluid experiences and vitals. And you kind of go, oh, come on, Google, what is that? And they started talking about the fluid experiences thing is just meaning there's some new stuff that it can do that it couldn't do before. It's quite an incremental.
Have you ever considered a job in marketing?
No. So the two things that they said were like a new, easier way to do multi-window. So if you're watching a YouTube video, you can quickly tap and the video will just disappear. So the screen will disappear and then you have a small window which you can drag really easily around the screen while you do other things.
So this is picture in picture?
Picture in picture.
And I'm not, and I promise I'm not sniping here, but it looks the same as the picture in picture that you got in iOS. and I'm not a sniper, I promise.
No.
I just want to see if it works in the same way. Because I don't know if it was iOS 9 or iOS 10 that got picture in picture. I think it was iOS 9. And it can sit in any of the four corners. You sort of swipe it and it snaps to one of those four corners.
It probably is quite like that, yeah.
And I believe that, am I right in saying that the YouTube app used to do that, but now they've extended it across the operating system to other things?
The YouTube app has a thing where if you're watching in portrait mode, you can drag the video from the top of the screen to the bottom and then search the rest of the YouTube app.
Okay.
But you haven't been able to go into other parts of the phone while still watching a video before, gotcha. I believe. And there are other things. Android doesn't usually have little notification bubbles, like, you know, the little red things when you got 800 million unread emails on iOS.
40,000.
Is that your number?
I'm on 300,000. Just
don't. It's not 47,455.
Wow.
Well, the YouTube thing, does that mean you can have it running in the background?
Yeah. So like you can start watching a video on your phone and then drag the window to another part of the screen, then go into another app and do other stuff.
Would you be able to have it on standby while you've got YouTube playing? Because that would just kill Spotify for me. It'd be great.
Ah, I don't know. Good point. Probably not. Probably when you lock the screen, it probably closes the app. And there's some other stuff, like you get like the little notification bubble. Just like the example they use would be on Instagram. If you have like a notification there, you can then long press that icon and then action the notification from the app icon rather than the notification shade. So it's all lots of stuff that normal people will just end up using, isn't very exciting to announce on a stage. Yeah. And another one of the cool things that they announced, I thought, was part of Google Photos. This is a thing called suggested sharing. So Google Photos is pretty good. I don't know if you guys, Tamlin will probably use it. Do you use it?
No.
I just think because you had an Android phone. Do you use it?
I do not use Google Photos.
Okay, well, you should. It's great.
He says this, but on the other hand, why?
Well, I like it because I find the interface easier to use than Apple's. Even though I do use an iPhone most of the time, I still sort all my photos out in Google Photos. And if you sign up to a Google account, you get 100 gigabytes free storage, which Apple does not do. You get 5 gigabytes free storage with Apple.
But with photo sharing streams, as far as I can
I hate
tell.
Apple's photo sharing
Why?
Software.
They're brilliant.
They're not.
They are.
They're not. They deleted all my photos and now I hate them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the new thing with Google Photos, which is cool, it already kind of does this, but face recognition, it can see who you're taking pictures of. So if me, Dave and Tamlin went on a lad's weekend away.
Can you imagine?
And we were snapping away on our phones all the hilarious things we were doing. From the weekend, I thought, oh, I can't be bothered to share all those photos with them.
Yeah.
What Google would do... with this new feature called suggested sharing is it will ping me and say, hey, these 30 pictures of Tamlin that I've found on your phone, and it will recognize which photos you're in. Do you want to send them to him? And then it's just basically a lazy way of looking thoughtful.
And you can set it to do that automatically. So you can tell it, as far as I understand.
I think they've got some... They were slightly reserved in that, obviously, you probably don't want to share all your... They made some quite edgy jokes about how you'd probably wouldn't want to share all the photos with your wife, and how the guy was saying, so I could set it to send pictures of my kids to my wife, and I could set it to be a date after I've met her, of course, as though he has, like, photos...
Of girlfriends before he met his wife,
yeah.
That's not totally unsavory, is it?
No, but the way he put it was quite funny. And he didn't even realise he was doing it. But I don't know. Looks like something that people might want to do. One of the more cool things about Google Photos as well, they did this example of taking, it's very American, taking a picture of your daughter at baseball practice through the fence. And you know, like the sort of diamond-shaped fences you get. Chain link, that's the one. It claims if you take a picture of your daughter through that, she's standing there ready to bat. On the phone, you will be able to, like, take the fence
edit
away.
Edit out the fence,
The entire thing goes away. It's mental.
Which is
amazing. Is that limited to baseball games? And
like, probably only American sports, yeah.
No baseball detected, cannot function. You've leapt ahead, you've confused me now. So we're talking about Google Photos.
Sorry, it's all part of Android though, isn't it?
I suppose it is.
Sorry.
Obviously, what's the photo book
Photo
company?
Books
photo
is...
Photo Box are going to be shaking in their boots. Or
I haven't heard of either of those companies, actually.
I use Photo Box.
Okay. But yeah, Photo Books is just a thing where you can, from $10, you'll be able to make a photo album on your phone and then order a physical hardback book of it.
Yeah, so this is already something that a lot of people do a lot of the time, and there's plenty of companies that cater for this need. What Google can do is bring machine learning to the party. That's what's missing.
Yes, exactly.
I can speak from experience that making a book in Photo Box, as good a service as it is hard work.
Yeah, so like after our lads weekend, it would send like 30 pictures of, do you want to make a photo book of lads weekend?
Lads.
And yeah, it would suggest 30 photos of, I don't know, the most fun things we were doing. And then, like you say, through machine learning, just sort of collate them into a nice presentable thing in time order, blah, blah, blah. And then just charge you for it.
Subject, whatever.
Yeah, and people probably will do that as well.
But they're reducing the friction as much as possible.
Yep.
The problem at the moment is that we take lots of photos and then there's a lot of work involved in processing them, in choosing the ones we want to keep, and they're actually bothering to print them.
It's the thing, yeah, because I have a thing with like taking pictures on a phone. I want to take more pictures and I try to, but then, like you say, I never bother going back and looking over them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just have thousands of photos sometimes of just nothing. And if there's a better way to collect them all into... I like the thing that they was also saying, this is partly also part of Google Lens, which is, I think it's going to be a standalone app, but it's something that's built into Google Photos, and it will be anyway, and into Google Assistant. And it will be able to pick up on what you've taken a photo of. So it's like a retrospective image search kind of thing. So if we were taking pictures of, if you go on like a holiday and you take pictures of the receipt in case you lose it or something, or you take a picture of a building, when you get back and you've forgotten what you took an interesting picture of because you saw so many... I don't know, churches and museums or whatever, or, I don't know, strip clubs and that kind of thing, whichever kind of holiday you're going on. And then you can look at the photo afterwards, and if you tap on it or whatever, however you interact with it, Google will be able to tell you what that building was. Like, this was the Empire State Building, or this is Papa John's in Walthamstow or something. And then, like, yeah.
Good holiday, that.
And if there's, like, a phone number on the front, you can just click that part of the image and it'll just call it or whatever, yeah. And then the one that, the second loudest cheer of the night was... for when you take a pic, you can take a picture, or not even a picture actually, it's like, because so, Lens will be like an AR viewfinder,
right?
And you can hover it over when you go on your mate's house and there's like a 12 letter long confusing Wi-Fi password on the back of the router.
Nice.
You just hold Google Lens up to it, it will recognize what you're doing and it will action
it. It'll recognize the context
and,
as well, that this
and
is
it will
a
action
Wi-Fi
it
password.
As well. So not only will it recognize that you're looking at a Wi-Fi router to get the password, it will then take that password and enter it for you automatically.
This is all amazing.
That's pretty cool.
If it works. Did you get to try any of this stuff out at the...
No, it's still unreleased, and all these things will be US only first. Everything was US first.
When can we expect any of it to drip down to the UK?
To segue again and probably ruin David's script, Google Home as an example, the Amazon Echo-esque speaker, that was in the US at least 6 months as a piece of hardware before it got anywhere else.
Mm.
And yesterday they announced this, they're going to enter more regions now, but it did take a long while for us to get that. So I would imagine by the end of the year, the end of the calendar year, because we won't get Android O as a full operating system download, or even on Google phones as a stable download, probably until the like summer, end of summer, and then it will take even longer to get them to every other OEM. Mm.
This is the frustrating thing about Android, isn't it? That you don't
get
this...
Because I've got a Pixel here, which I've already downloaded Android O onto. So if you've got a Pixel or a Nexus device, you can opt into the public beta right now. It's very easy to do, and you just have to agree that you're probably going to get some slight bugs and unstable software. But for everyone else, particularly manufacturers who have sort of heavy Android skins like Samsung or LG, who aren't very stock, it can take months until you get the update.
Would you recommend that people download the beta? Is this one of those,
no,
don't put it on your primary work phone?
Yeah,
situation?
We have the privilege of having more than one phone knocking around, so we can just use this device that we've got here to like test it out and whatever, and it's not the end of the world if it kind of bars me or blocks me or whatever. I probably the same that we would say, yeah, for an iOS update as well. Don't download it if it's the only phone you've got.
Yeah. I always
but it is fun to mess around with it.
There's a limited... I'm never really sure totally why most people do it, because you get it this early on, it's going to be very flawed, and it, as you said, it may damage.
Well, exactly, yeah. It's people just making device more public, something that was always for developers anyway.
Yeah. It's more for their benefit than for ours, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you get to brag, I suppose, you get to show off. From our point of view,
we're
tech
writers. Thing to show off about.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's good for us because we're going to write about it, but
yeah,
for the man on the street, I don't know if it's a great idea to get this early in the beta.
No, probably not. But I probably wouldn't say so.
If I can drag you back to AR.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about VPS.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Again, it's something for developers to work on, and there are different use cases. VPS is Visual Positioning System, which is a Google technology, and the example they used was if you have your phone on you, it can learn the space around you. So if you were in it, it'd be... In my head, it would be particularly good for merchandising in shops, physical shops, because you'll see where people... I don't know, it depends if companies can collect that data. But what they were saying as well would be... I'm not explaining this well at all. It's probably because I don't understand it. If you're walking around a place, your phone will learn where things were, and it will learn to like return you to those places. If
does
you
this mean
to
you have to be
was.
Constantly showing it everything?
I don't know. I was live blogging this, and I skimped on some of the details of this particular thing. But it was saying, for example, it could help people with visual impairment to learn frequently visited spaces. And I don't quite know. I think it was more of a, like an open but thing for developers to try and take it on.
I know it's not so much of a Google thing because they largely do the software. I know they do some handsets as well. But when are manufacturers going to catch up to like all the battery draining from all these new features?
Right.
So
yeah.
I know like was it the P2, LG P2?
There was a Novo P2 recently, which has really good battery life.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
And like that's pretty much the best battery you're going to get at the moment. And that's about 2 days or something of like moderate use.
Yeah.
But most new handsets aren't going to be able to. You're not going to be able to make use of all these features without...
They did address this slightly, so that's a good point. The Lenovo P2, and there's a phone called the Moto Z Play. They have ridiculously good battery life, and it's because those manufacturers have taken a mid-range chipset, which is the Snapdragon 625. Just you guys can write that down. And it's a processor that doesn't fire on all cylinders, basically. It doesn't need to, and for the sort of things that the consumers who buy it are doing, it's quite low level. But then the battery efficiencies are massive, and you will get over 2 days out of them. The only time they actually talked about battery life was a very small bit when they were talking about the vitals of Android O, and it was more scaling back on background processes, because Android, compared to iOS, runs background processes all the time, and it's quite hard with all these different sort of developers and platforms and hardware to make them run more efficiently. And it's something that they were addressing, but they only addressed it for about 30 seconds. And it was just kind of, yeah, that was all they said about battery life.
It's going to be a bit more lean in terms of what's going on in the background.
Yeah, like it'll be a bit more intelligent as to what you need to run as a background process. Mm. If you're running a Maps app and you need turn-by-turn directions, obviously it's not going to turn it off. But I don't know, as a bland example, if you close Facebook, it will just kind of shut down. It doesn't need to reload everything all the time in the background. Mm. So hopefully. But yeah, I mean, the battery just has to be bigger, basically, and phones aren't going to get any bigger.
But that's all about compromises, I guess, because Apple, in turn, used to always get a load of flack for the fact that they don't work in the background, that you shut down and or you move to a different app and the previous app effectively becomes a static image of it instead of continuing to run.
Yeah.
But that has payoffs in terms of good battery life.
Yeah, it does.
So presumably there'll be some people that won't like this. But.
Yeah, I think that most consumers probably want both. And I think this is just a presentation which is kind of saying you can't really have both, but developers kind of understand the process more than I do.
Bit of a tangent here, but do you think that'll ever be achievable?
I think the actual battery technology will have to change. Mm. I don't think with the current way the lithium-ion batteries like lose their charge and how hardware is currently going, I don't personally think it will get any better before the battery tech has some sort of breakthrough.
I don't really see how it's ever going to get drastically better until people change their priorities, because at the moment...
People won't do that, though.
Exactly. At the moment, if you have a new phone which is brought out, if you have two phones that come out at the same time and one of them has got thinner and better graphics and bigger screen, and the other one has just got a better battery life, people will always get the one which has all the exciting new features. They always say they want battery life, but I think in practice, I think companies simply realise that it's not a sexy thing to talk about on stage, even though it's practical and it's what they should be doing, because we've reached peak smartphone and who cares about a bigger processor at this point?
Yeah, exactly. A good example of that is the Moto phone I mentioned. Moto don't sell too many, but compared to other manufacturers, but they have been making some good products recently. And so they had the Moto Z last year, which is the premium flagship one, which is like 5 millimetres, which is ridiculous thin. No headphone jack, small battery and everything, but it's this really premium high-end processor. And then they have the Z Play, which is really thick and has like a mid-range processor, but it's got incredible battery life and it's like half the price. But no one bought it. Perhaps it's a bad example because maybe nobody bought either. But yeah, they did like a mid-range cheaper one for like £350 with like an amazing battery. But still, you kind of, even I was just sitting there looking at them, I was like, oh, I really want the thin one, which is really inconvenient to my life.
this is decades of advertising taking its effect on our brains. So we just want the newest, shiniest thing. We don't want the most practical.
The thing I'm literally most excited about is battery life. Yeah. I don't know what that says about me, but...
No.
I hate carrying around a power pack and...
Yeah, it's a pain. Nonsense. Yeah. There are phones out there that are addressing it, but like David says, it's not a sexy marketing thing. Even though every year they say, oh, we got 1 hour extra out of the iPhone this year for battery life. People don't buy it for that reason. Mm-hmm. They buy it because it's an iPhone. And, segue, Google Assistant is now on the iPhone in the US, not in the UK.
Yeah. all right, so for the basics, what is Google Assistant?
Google Assistant is a voice-activated on-phone assistant that can help you do things. So a bit like Siri, but slightly more conversational. So Siri is...
So it can understand sort of colloquial language?
Yeah. The kind of way they said that they like to think about Assistant is it's not like how you would type something into Google. It's how you would just have a conversation with somebody. So if we wanted to find out the
look
weather...
Look at the photos from the lads' holiday.
Yeah, exactly. But like that's maybe not a good example because I wouldn't Google that. But if you wanted to know what the weather was like in, I don't know, Winchester on next Saturday, you type weather Winchester Saturday into Google. But if you talk to somebody, if I went up to you and said that, you would, we'd be having
words.
That is
how you talk to me.
So you'd say, okay, Google, what's the weather going to be like in Winchester on Saturday? And then the thing that Google Assistant can then do, as well as hopefully display the correct answer, is you can then continue the conversation with it. So you say, what about in the evening? Or can you always display that in cell?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Celsius and things like that. And it's different to Siri in that I think it's probably slightly more natural and it does work slightly better more frequently. Mm. There are things it's not very good at as well. And on the iPhone, I don't know how it's really going to work because Siri is integrated, obviously. You hold down the power, is it the power button? No, the home button, home button. And it fires up. And
well,
it's the same.
You just say, hey, Siri.
Exactly. And the same on Google phones, you say, okay, Google. Or you just hold down the home button, whereas Google Assistant on the iPhone will be a standalone app.
Yeah, because you've got Siri, what's it called, SiriKit, the API.
Yeah.
So in theory, they should be able to plug it into most of the rest of the operating system. But there's always that feeling that Apple, like we were talking about this earlier about Apple Maps and Google Maps and the problem on when you do Google Maps driving directions, that iOS just doesn't really look after it.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop notifications from popping up and distracting you in the way that it would on Apple Maps. So you always think, well, is Google Assistant going to be as convenient all the way through as Siri? Even if it's
I
platform.
Personally, maybe slightly pessimistically, but it probably isn't far from the truth. This is just Google getting onto iPhone in order for iPhone users to be more inclined to buy into some of their other services, I think.
Yeah.
Apple is still without a home speaker like an Echo or a Google Home. And if you have iPhone users intrigued and downloading a free Google Assistant app, it's going to start pushing them more Google services. I wouldn't be surprised if it sort of puts them towards stuff like Google Photos, buying the Google Home thing, and just using Google services more. I think if they can get that onto those iPhones, that's pretty good for Google, even if people probably won't use it that much.
Well, related to that point, a guy I follow on Twitter, Benedict Evans, I don't know if this is true, but he says that Google Assistant ignores the iPhone's own calendar and contacts.
Probably.
Even though it can have access to them, and iOS does give those apps free range into other companies' products. So what to use it, you have to be using Gmail.
Google Calendar.
Calendar.
It's quite clever.
Yeah, that's a marketing play rather than a...
This is a total marketing play, yeah.
So that means that fewer people will want to use Google Assistant because it's less well integrated, but the ones that do use Google Assistant are more likely to then be dragged into the Google
sphere. Yeah, so I suppose the end goal for Google, which still has a sort of quite fledgling hardware business, is next time somebody goes, I really love this, I'm going to get a Pixel, I'm not going to buy an iPhone.
Yeah. I'm going to get the better version of Google Assistant where everything is integrated.
Yeah.
It's a clever move. We've been talking for a long time.
So
what about Android?
Long, yeah.
Android Go.
That was the last thing I was going to talk about. And still, Google did quite well of disguising that they've tried this before and it didn't really work. Android One was a program where you had hardware and software sort of developed by Google for developing countries or just for those who can't afford high-end hardware for Android to run stably on those things, and giving developers the opportunity to make software that. It is more optimized for those conditions. So Android Go is their second go at it, and it's more software based. They're not going to be developing hardware, and the country they focus on is India, because apparently there are now more Android users in India than in the United States. Sort of devices that people may be even using to go on the internet for the very first time, or owning a device for the first time that's able to get them online, and it's just for devices that run a gig or less of RAM. And considering most high end phones now run about 4 or 6. They're quite cheap devices, but you want to. Yeah. If you try to run full Android Nougat on one of those things, it's just going to clog up and just not work. There's not enough memory.
Could you consciously run Android O on a high-end phone in order to get better battery life?
Run Android O.
Android Go.
Oh right. I don't
deliberately
think
under demand.
I think they might limit it to. Again, it was unclear about how this software would make it onto those phones. But it will prioritize, for instance, like the light versions of Twitter and Facebook in the App Store and things like that. And there's some quite prominent data saving features, because we're maybe in a position where we don't have to worry about spending data to watch that YouTube video on the bus or whatever. But it will tell you how many megabytes of data you're going to use before you watch something. You can download and save for later, so you can watch on Wi-Fi or whatever, things like that.
Nice.
Pretty clever. But we've talked for absolutely ages.
Will any of those features come to other areas of Android? Because that sounds quite...
That sounds quite cool, doesn't it? Yeah, they didn't address that. You would hope that if it makes it to like a full high-end version of Android, it would probably be something that would be optionally turned on and off within the settings. But it seemed quite cool. You can like preview YouTube videos in sort of like a 10 sort of stop-start frame-by-frame thing, so you can even decide if you want to watch it. If you think, that looks rubbish, I'm not going to spend my data on that. And it just looked quite very good. Yeah. It looked good. If it works, it just depends how they're going to distribute that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go around the room. Question. Io, Ayo, or there's three answers this time.
Oh,
or,
wow.
Y-O-Y-O-Y. Tamlin.
There's three answers. That was two.
There's three. There's the standard one, Io. Mm. There's a really good one, Ayo. Or there's the bad one, Y-O-Y-O-Y.
I'll go with Io.
The middle one.
No, the first one.
Well, that's the medium. Fine. Okay, you're Io. Henry, what's your answer?
Ayo.
That's a good one.
Thanks.
Nice. I'm going to say Ayo.
I didn't even talk about half the things. Sorry, we went on for too long. But if you want to check out more on pcadvisor.co.uk, obvs.
Do it. Yeah. Nice. We'll be back in a minute to talk about WannaCry. Tamlin McGee, why do you want to cry?
Well...
Is it because you just listened to Henry Burrell talking about Google for 28 minutes?
Sick burn.
Well, David, there's been a ransomware attack that's been dominating the headlines pretty much all over the world starting last Friday, so a week ago when this podcast goes live, which has kind of wrought havoc in a way that perhaps most contemporary viruses haven't done. Organizations being really ill prepared to deal with it, NHS hospitals being shut down, and so on. It's called WannaCry.
All right, first of all, why is it called WannaCry?
Because it makes you want to cry.
Nice. fair enough. And what happens when you get WannaCry? Or you said the NHS. Is it only companies and organizations that get it? Or
no.
Ordinary people get it?
Absolutely anyone's vulnerable to it. Basically, once the ransomware's on your system, it will encrypt all your files and it will run a piece of software that will demand a Bitcoin payment of between $300 and $600, roughly, to unencrypt your files.
Right. And should people pay that?
No. There's been absolutely no evidence of of anyone getting their files back who's paid so far. But the reason why this virus is so interesting is because it's based on something called Eternal Blue, which was an exploit that was that was held onto by the NSA, which is the American Intelligence Agency, and leaked by a group that called themselves the Shadow Brokers earlier this year. And it sounds like something straight out of a Mr. Robot episode. Basically, Eternal Blue uses something called a server message block protocol in Windows to kind of understand the way files are shared on the local area network and the wider network that connects to the internet. So the ransomware it's a combined effort between your typical ransomware that locks files and a worm because it self-propagates as well.
So after it's encrypted all your files, it then sends it to what, everybody in your contacts list, or
it tries to find other hosts on the local area network, and then also through the internet as well, depending on open ports and so on.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like we've got a few people who maybe are to blame here. So there's like a vulnerability in Windows
mm-hmm.
that was then discovered but kept secret by the NSA.
Yeah. So
and then shared by a group of hackers.
So the vulnerability was made known earlier this year, and then the Shadow Brokers said they had access to it, and they leaked it earlier this year as well. Microsoft actually patched it for all the sort of contemporary and supported Windows systems. So if you had Windows Update turned on, you were probably not vulnerable to it. But the problem is organizations like the NHS, who are running older versions of XP, for example, who apparently didn't have a contract renewed that would have carried on supporting XP, were left vulnerable because they didn't get the patch.
Is XP even supported now?
No, it stopped being supported officially in 2014, but organizations still running it. So the NHS, for example, has a lot of hardware that will run on XP. It's the biggest employer in the UK, so that's an absolutely enormous suite to upgrade to the latest license or whatever. It was running an old version of XP, and
but didn't they contract Microsoft to sort of update it with like a one-off payment? Wasn't like a £5 million contract they paid to have it repatched.
That was ended in 2015.
That was 2015, right.
Mm-hmm.
Grim.
So Windows XP support finished in 2014. The NHS trusts were covered until 2015, and from what I've read so far anyway, the government didn't sign off on extending that contract to keep it updated.
Great.
Do we know which member of the government is at fault here? Who should have signed that up?
I mean, I've heard both Hunt, Jeremy Hunt, and also Theresa May as well, who was Home Secretary at the time. But what's interesting about it is I think, you know, when there's big cyber attacks or whatever, we tend to see the effects just in the digital domain. So, you know, people can't access their files, which is what happened here, or, yeah, you know, they have their password stolen or money goes missing or whatever. But here we're seeing like a real world physical impact whereby, yeah, because, say, patient records were inaccessible and people had to disconnect from the wider NHS system, hospitals were having to turn people away at A&Es, GPs were cancelling surgeries for the day, prescriptions couldn't be managed, operations had to be delayed. Yeah. We don't know if anyone's died from it, but it's possible.
Surely they have. Yeah,
yeah, there's
it's
a bloke possible. Who was like all cafed up and ready to go into his heart operation.
That's right.
And then they were like, nah, soz.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it's nowhere near as serious, but my daughter was going to have an appointment, just, you know, fairly routine.
Yeah.
Can't get an appointment. They can't get on the system.
Just can't
it's
do
not
it.
Going to happen until August now. It is, you're right. I mean, people aren't aware of security because it doesn't affect normal people in their normal lives. But this is absolutely vital, essential services being affected.
Mm. I think one of the earliest examples, well, the most headline grabbing, fairly recent example of like physical infrastructure being attacked was the Stuxnet virus, which was a joint American-Israeli operation to shut down nuclear centrifuges in Iran, which it did successfully. But in terms of things that have affected the West, physical infrastructure, it's like nothing that we've seen before. Europol described it as unprecedented in scale and also impact. But what the interesting thing is, well, another interesting thing about it is that it's not been successful in raising money. So right. To date, as of today, it's raised $81,958. But that's with more than 150 countries affected and more than 300,000 systems being infected.
Mm.
Do we know roughly how many people that would mean have paid up? So you said it was, I can't remember how much you said it, that was demanded.
Between $300 and $600. I think it's $300 at first and then $600 within 7 days. I'm bad at math. So
that's about 250 people have paid up.
So it hasn't been effective in terms of raising money, which brings in more questions about, you know, what the motive was in the first place.
Yeah. Is it political?
Well, no one knows is the short answer.
I heard that it was linked to North Korea.
I mean, there's some... There are some private security researchers who linked some lines of code to something called, if you just let me check my notes, the Lazarus Group, which is...
This really does sound like a TV show.
Yeah, right?
Hackers are amazing.
there was something operating out of China, allegedly called the Lazarus Group, which was supposed to be acting on behalf of North Korea. I think the Sony film hack was related to them.
Right.
But the researchers who have said that have also said that just because there's similarities in code doesn't mean that it's necessarily them.
Yeah, could be a false flag.
Absolutely, because it's really easy to plant code that suggests it's from one group when it's not. You know, it's a very difficult thing to trace.
Yeah. Right, okay.
it's a lot to take in, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. The problem is now solved? Or is it an ongoing problem?
I mean...
Do people need to worry?
Yes, in short.
I mean, in general, I mean about this.
I mean, ransomware isn't a new thing. It's been going on for nearly a couple of decades, I think, at least,
right. In
some form or another. The scale of this one is something that we haven't seen before. On Friday... There was an independent security researcher who calls himself Malware Tech, who discovered a kind of kill switch
right. In
the code. So when the code operates, it checks a domain name, which is a series of sort of nonsensical letters and numbers, really long domain. And provided it can't access this domain, then it carries on infecting. So what he did was registered the domain, and that stopped attacks for a little while.
Right.
Stopped it spreading further.
Yeah, or at least systems that were infected by it, the code checked the domain, found it was registered, and didn't carry out the ransomware attack.
Mm.
But that was Friday, and the code's evolved now to either check different domains, or there's other variants appearing that are in like different languages or copycat versions and so on.
And this guy that fixed it, then got outed by the tabloids.
Yeah, that's
just,
right.
Which is just unbelievable.
He said over and over on his Twitter that he didn't want to talk to the press and didn't want his real name out there, but they found his real name and published it anyway.
Yeah, it's already a horrible article about that, and the headline was just the guy that fixed WannaCry failed his GCSEs or something like that. Yeah. It's like, bloody hell.
But thanks for that.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
He literally saved life.
Yeah.
And doesn't want to be...
Doesn't want any credit. And he's just being vilified. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they go on those sort of crusades, don't they? You remember when they were trying to find out who Burial was? And it was like, why does anybody need to know that? You know Burial?
The dubstep guy.
Dubstep.
Mm-hmm. Banksy and shit like that.
Exactly.
Banksy and Burial and malware tech.
Well, okay, so...
Sitcom waiting to happen.
The evil people who did this, if I can paint it in black and white for you, mm-hmm. They've not got very much. They've got 80 grand out of it.
They've got 80 grand.
No one... Is anybody else going to gain from this?
Potentially. I mean, at the moment, there's theories as to who these...
manufacturers, maybe.
Well, yeah, actually, stocks jumped in Sophos and a bunch of other antivirus providers on Monday, I think.
Yeah.
The shares kind of went through the roof as people rushed to buy security stocks.
Mm. And what about Windows? I mean, Microsoft itself is going to gain when people update Windows, right? I mean, that's what it wants
them
to do.
We can't update from XP, so you'd have to buy new hardware. Yeah.
I mean, it's so complicated as to where to lay the blame if you want to lay the blame. Because, I mean, Microsoft has said intelligence agencies should be disclosing these vulnerabilities, not holding on to them.
Yep.
The Shadow Brokers, which is the group that released Eternal Blue, which is what WannaCry is based
Eternal
on.
Eternal Blue by the Shadow Brokers.
Eternal Blue.
Sounds like a shoegaze band.
Eternal Blue was found by the NSA and released by the Shadow Brokers. Who claim they've got a bunch of other exploits that they're sitting on, also taken from the NSA, which they're now planning to release once every month in a package they've described as like a wine club. So you'll be able to pay and get access to all these things.
Taste.
But in short, you know, there's no use scaremongering, but yeah, like it's worth being mindful that ransomware is a thing. I think if there's one positive that's going to come out of this, maybe people will be a bit more mindful of the fact that these systems are really easy to compromise. I mean, it's easy to launch a ransomware attack. You can buy ransomware as a service on the dark web for about 10 quid. Yeah. Anyone can do it. So if it gets people like practicing basic security culture, then maybe that'll be a positive from this. But it's certainly indicative of the times we're living in terms of, you know, this sort of stuff isn't going away.
Do you think people will see this happening and the success of it, and it will encourage them into a hacking career? That made me sound about 75 years old. Is it going to encourage more black hats? That was even worse. You know what I mean? You
know what that means.
Yeah. You know, black hats are bad hackers. Oh, the guy that fixed it, he's an ethical hacker.
Right.
Do they call
them
white hats anymore?
White hat hackers, white hat. Yeah. I mean, I don't know is the answer, is the non-answer to that.
Fair enough.
But I think... There have been various calls, like from Microsoft, for instance, but also a bunch of the papers and the tech press, including us, saying, you know, is this going to be the wake-up call that people finally need to take cybersecurity really seriously, you know, potentially lost lives in hospitals and so on?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is hopefully, but probably not.
Yeah. General public, probably not. I think it's still perceived as something that isn't their problem.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think it's true.
As in, they were affected by it and they'll be outraged by it. But it's such a big thing that you don't feel like you can action it on a one-to-one basis.
I talked to a guy from a vendor called Carbon Black a couple of months ago, talking about the idea of a digital Geneva Convention, which Microsoft is also pushing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he reckons, you know, he was an ex-Marine, and he said, you know, he loves the Geneva Convention in terms of it protects people, but it took a series of horrible events before countries got together and decided this sort of thing needs to exist to protect people.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, who's to say whether a few days with the NHS out of order will be enough of a shock to make people realise that
like
this
say,
is a real thing that can happen, you know.
And it's not abstract. Easily be done to, like, scary stuff like air traffic control and things like that.
Absolutely.
Into that sort of system when you have to actually pay.
Yeah.
Or people fall out of the sky.
And like, again, we don't know the motivations of these people, but it does make you think, if it is financial, like, what if there was some kind of actor or multiple actors who developed malware specifically to wreak havoc on systems, and two or three of them were successful and spread at the same time. And, you know, would we be able to firefight effectively enough to combat that? This last week seems to suggest that, you know, we'd be able to get over it eventually, but you could cause considerable damage. And
week it suggests that we can get away with it if we're extremely lucky and somebody and an individual is very clever. And it gives me absolutely no confidence in the ability of the systems themselves to survive. It was just some guy in his bedroom spotted a flaw in the code and did something off his own back and then got punished for it as well. Mm-hmm.
I went to a roundtable with Raj Samani, who is at McAfee. How do you pronounce that? McAfee.
McAfee,
let's go with that one. It sounds better. But he also advises Europol, and he was saying that, you know, the technology industry talks about information sharing all the time now, but in terms of, like, criminal gangs and making malicious code better, they've been doing it for ages. There's a parallel between the way this code has evolved and the Mirai botnet, which happened earlier this year, which was an Internet of Things botnet to launch massive DDoS attacks.
Yeah.
That code got open sourced and it got made more sophisticated and better.
Yeah. I think we're going to be scaring people right now, and maybe we should stop. Thank you.
It's also
Tanya.
Really, really hot in this room.
Yeah, it is. It's the white hot tech heat or something. I've got a question. Do you think wanna cry, wanna die, wanna pie, or I wish I could fly? I don't really know what any of those mean. Henry?
No, I think I still want to cry. It's good. Still quite scary.
Tamlin?
I wish I could fly.
And I want a pie. Thank you for listening. And tune in next week for more UK Tech Weekly shenanigans. Bye-bye. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
See
you. UK Tech Weekly podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.